is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars Episode N, and we're very pleased to welcome a distinguished editor and author, Rod Pyle, author most recently of Space 2.0, How Private Spaceflight, a Resurgent NASA, and International Partners are Creating a New Space Age. However, today we address space settlement. It's imminent. We have Elon Musk tweeting that he'd like to rename Boca Chica, Texas, into Starbase, Texas. We have a success of Starship landing as it should, and we have reasons to go forward. Rod is also a heavily associated editor of the National Space Society's magazine Ad Astra. Rod, a very good evening to you. I ask the first question here. Why go in to space colonies? Why space colonies? And I read an editorial in your most recent magazine, Ad Astra, that suggests it's for resources. What resources, Rod? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and thanks for having me on. Great to be here. There are a lot of resources out there. As you'll see quoted often in our magazine, there's many, many, many times the resources, some of the most desirous ones that we use commonly in modern society in space and on Earth. A lot of them are tied up with the asteroids. Some are on the planets and the moon. The one that we're looking at most covetously now is simply water. Not that we don't have plenty of water on Earth, although that's going to be something that we'll be looking at as a desired resource in the next 50 to 100 years, because there's less of it than there used to be in terms of fresh water. But the reason you want to find water in space is it's really expensive to launch it off the Earth. Many, many thousands of dollars per pound. And when you can find it in places like the moon and Mars, that's great because it's in a much lower gravity well, and you can use the water that you find out there to make rocket fuel and breathable oxygen and so forth. And that's really one of the primary things that's going to be of value in the next 10 to 30 years.
David?
Hi, Rod. Is the water drinkable water, or how does that work for human settlement? Do they think there's sufficient supplies for lots of people over a long period of time?
There's many, many thousands of tons, if not millions of tons, on the lunar poles, we're pretty sure, because that's been spotted from orbit. And Mars has enough fresh water on it to basically cover the entire planet with something up on the order of 100 to 300 feet if it was all brought to the surface and melted. The asteroids have water. Yeah, it may need some processing. It depends on which source you're looking at, but there's lots of it all over the place. Then, of course, you get out, beyond the asteroid belt to Jupiter and Saturn and the Jovian and Saturnian moons, and they're just covered with the stuff. So it turns out the solar system is a lot wetter than we thought.
Reasons to go into space settlements, and I'm reading from an editorial appearing in Ad Astra by Dale Scran, the senior operating officer of the National Space Society. The second reason is spinoffs. What we will require in space has to do with food, with energy sources. Rod, is this science fiction anymore? Can we do this? Can we grow plants in space?
Yeah, we have. We've grown flowers. We've grown edible leafy plants on the space station, the International Space Station. We'll be looking soon at how to do similar kinds of work on the moon and on Mars. One of the difficulties NASA's had over the years is explaining why space is important, why it matters to us. And they try and do so often by talking about spinoffs. And there's so many of them, and we won't have time to go into them here. But the things that it takes to make space doable by human beings, especially, create an awful lot of technological advantages for us here on the Earth. So, for instance, moving out into these settlements, especially if you're talking about free space settlements or constrained settlements on the surface of Moon or Mars, we're not going to be bringing a bunch of cows with us because it's a very inefficient way to make meat. But we will be doing cellular agriculture, which is something that's advancing very aggressively right now. Much less pollution, a lot less resources will be needed to grow that cellular meat, which is a protein base that people need. So that's just one example. You bring that back down to Earth, suddenly you've cut down on greenhouse gas emissions, and all kinds of things are better. But there's many other examples, many of them technological.
David?
Rod, Dale didn't mention it, but the medical and the scientific spinoff, coming back and helping people on Earth are pretty phenomenal. Are they a good reason for pushing out for settlements, or do people think that these advancements would probably happen anyway without space?
Well, the human beings being the curious species we are, it's hard to say whether they would happen or not. I suspect most of them would, but as you know very well, the Apollo program alone generated so many spinoffs that have been advantageous, many of them medical and biomedical in nature, all the way down there to improve kidney dialysis. So there's just so many things that have to be pushed forward as we do this, and this really accelerates them. And it's worth remembering a couple of other things. One, NASA, the Apollo program, one of the greatest enhancers of technological education in the U.S. in the 1960s, 70s, and even the 80s that there was. And two, for every dollar put into the Apollo program, just by example, depending on the estimate you look at, either $16 or $21 of benefits came back. And it all comes back to the U.S. economy. This is one of the few things we spend money on exclusively here, other than defense. So that's a really wonderful result as well.
Two reasons I'm going to put together: long-term survival of our species, Homo sapiens, and what Elon Musk calls the backup drive. How does that work, Rod? What is the backup drive from Elon Musk's metaphor, and how does space settlement help us survive?
Well, there's a longer version of this answer, but the short version is something's going to happen on Earth eventually that's going to make it very hard for humans to survive here. We will probably survive here, but it could be anything that would stress the survival of the species, from climate change to an asteroid strike on the Earth to even something as horrible as a gamma ray burst from a nearby star that would wipe out just about everybody on our planet, depending on how long it lasted. And all these things are possibilities, but probably the most near term of them is climate change. Now, there's a lot of people that take exception to the idea of, in any case other than something like an asteroid strike or a gamma ray burst, who take exception to running away from Earth and trying to start over on another planet because they feel like we ought to take care of this one first before we start settling other ones. Musk feels a little differently about that, as do some others. They feel that it's very important to have humanity expand beyond Earth so that we do have these toeholds in other worlds just in case something happens here. You know, I don't think that's a bad idea. It's a little upsetting if you're not one of the ones that gets to go, if you're staying here and something terrible goes wrong. But we do need to start moving beyond this planet, if only for our ultimate survival as an expanding species.
David?
Musk, of course, seeks out going to Mars. There are other places, including backups in free space, like Gerard
right.
O'Neill talked about. Any commentary on how free space drives and settlements are being pushed or hope are being plausible?
Well, and there's a couple of articles this issue of the magazine. It's 100 pages with almost no ads, so I had a lot of ability to sit and play in my sandbox this time, which I love. I think there's a natural draw towards the surface of other worlds, whether it's the moon or Mars. We keep looking covetously at Mars because it's something that feels familiar to us. It looks like the deserts of Utah. There's hills and mountains. There's an atmosphere there, albeit a very thin one. And it's something that is familiar and something that I think we desire. But as has been pointed out by the National Space Society many times, including in articles in this issue, there's a lot of advantages to free space colonies. You can have full gravity if they're spinning, as long as they're large enough and they're designed the proper way. You can have multiple times the surface area of the Earth if you have a number of these colonies. And you can utilize solar power resources in such a way that they become almost free of resource needs once they're up and running, again, assuming they're large enough, they have a balanced ecosystem and so forth. So there's a lot of people that are really looking at that as the right way to go. And Jeff Bezos is one of them, by the way. He's been a devotee of the ideas of Gerry O'Neill for decades. And I think from everything I've read and from talking to him very briefly, that's very much the way he wants to go, is free space colonies. Part of his drive is to move heavy industry off Earth and let the planet recover, which is an interesting twist on this. And then the other part, of course, is just people living and working in those settings.
The magazine, the new issue, is of Ad Astra, highly recommended. It's great fun, especially for those of us who have no opportunity to imagine ourselves on the surface of Mars. We can imagine our children and our grandchildren there. Rod Pyle of Ad Astra is author most recently of Space 2.0, How Private Spaceflight, a Resurgent NASA, and International Partners Are Creating a New Space Age. David Livingston, Dr. Space of The Space Show. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N, CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.